The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the Goal Line Club has populated their events page. They're going to have four luncheons, okay? So make sure you sign up today. Space is limited. They're going to be at Jack's Cafe.
One of my favorite spots in Northeast. They're an outstanding establishment, big Gopher fans. And if you want to go to one of these luncheons, go to goallineclub.org. Reserve your tickets today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to, if this is your first podcast of Gopher football, or if this is your 100-and-something podcast, welcome to the now ranked Gophers, which I still think are probably ranked a little bit too low, as they are the number 21 team in the country via the AP poll, the 23 team in the country via the coaches poll. As Minnesota goes into East Lansing and absolutely decimates the number 21, spare me those of you who think the coaches' poll is a joke. I'd say both polls are a joke, but there was a ranked Michigan State team. If you don't think they're very good, Minnesota hadn't won there since 2006, and they absolutely slobber-knocked them. I mean, it was an absolute drumming in this game, continuing on what was a 100 and I believe 84 to 23-ish, I think, was the final points. I'll have to look that up again at the end of September, a September to remember. And joining us, as always, here is my second cousin, Dinkytown Athletes Own, which is launching here very, very soon, Derek, is Derek Burns. Derek, I have not seen something like that on the road in a Big Ten game against what I still assume is going to be a bowl team in Michigan State. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, guys. I appreciate you having me back. And I would agree with you. I think Michigan State was a good team. Probably a lot of people questioning that perhaps after the game. But winning a road game in the Big Ten, they don't come easy. And I do think Michigan State was a solid team. But overall, just excellent performance by the Gophers.
All right. We do want to welcome those of you that might be listening for the very first time. And if, as Ryan said, this is episode 262 for you, we also appreciate you sticking around. Definitely a number of people have piqued interest, and I'm getting a lot more messages from fair weather Gopher fans, but excited to have you all joining us as well. I'm going to give you one disclaimer, as you're now about just a handful of minutes in. We get kind of deep and we don't go very surface level. You're going to hear us talk about guys that you normally wouldn't hear on the radio, and we apologize for that in advance because we're not going to change. So the podcast is going to be exactly the same as it's always been. And if you don't like it, it's okay. We take no offense. Those of you that have stuck with us for over 260 episodes, thank you. All right, so let's get into this one. The Gophers win 34-7 over the Michigan State Spartans in East Lansing. This is absolutely a drumming. I think the thing that's probably first and foremost on everyone's mind is the fact that the Gophers offensively put up big numbers, specifically in the passing game. And Derek, I mean, we messaged about this during the game. This was just a masterclass by Kirk Sharaka and Tanner Morgan in terms of taking what the defense gives you and executing on top of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Michigan State, and I don't really blame them, they really wanted to test the Gophers' wide receivers. They started out the game with a plus one box and running down in distances, and they went mostly man coverage and brought a lot of pressures. So they really wanted to challenge wide receivers to see if they could win one-on-one matchups. And as you said, the Gophers responded with a really good game plan to isolate single coverage out of various formations and personnel, and were able to capitalize on that because of, you know, really all three phases: throwing the ball, catching, and pass blocking. So good across the board to react to Michigan State's initial scheme. And, you know, as the game went on, Michigan State had, frankly, had to pull out of that scheme and run a little bit more too high safety. And that's, of course, when the running game got going and we're able to have success there.
Well, I think the thing I noticed to start the game, to Derek's point, is they were doing a lot of single high safety. And after the first two drives where Minnesota goes down the field, gets a couple of touchdowns, they then switched in the second quarter to two high. And so you look at some of those key plays on the first couple of drives where Brevin Spanford has a huge catch in the red zone, gets Minnesota down to the 2 yard line. He's in man coverage. He's able to win that matchup. He's able to get Minnesota down to the two. But it was another day where Tanner Morgan in this passing game, Luke, I had a couple of people ask me, and Derek, I'd be curious for your thoughts too. I mean, this looked like 2019 first game of Big Ten play, Tanner Morgan against Purdue, where he was confident. He knew exactly where he wanted to go with the ball. He was making the throws. And you look up on the day, he's 23 of 26, for, which is an 88% completion percentage, 268 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, it was as good as we've seen Tanner Morgan look, but I think the game plan being Michigan State wanted to test them. And I thought it was fascinating that Jacoby Windman, who is the two-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week already here in 2022 for Michigan State, he's the one who punched the ball out of Muhammad Ibrahim to force that fumble. He had comments after the game where he said, well, we didn't know that Tanner Morgan could actually move a little bit. We were told that he couldn't move. And I'm thinking to myself, have you not watched any, like, did you not watch any of the games? Now, I'm not saying Tanner Morgan's the next coming of Chris Streveler, for those of you who are diehard Gopher fans, or Lamar Jackson, but the 40-year-old insurance agent can certainly move with his legs, and that's where you saw him pick up three first downs with his legs. I don't understand the game plan of how does your best defensive player not know that the quarterback can be a little bit mobile, Derek?
Well, you can see that that's where their game plan was keyed on. I mean, again, the amount of single man coverage downfield, leaving that, you know, the scrambles open, that's they didn't feel he had that. And I would say, you know, at times he struggled with pocket presence, but in this game, I mean, this is the most comfortable that I've seen Tanner Morgan going through his progressions in all of his time here at Minnesota. There were a number of times, well, two things stood out to me. A number of times where you see when Michigan State brought those pressures, he threw right behind the pressure underneath the safety. So if they happen to bring pressure from the slot, or if they happen to bring pressure from the edge with a corner crash, you look at him calmly, went through his progression, threw right behind the pressure and underneath the safety, because he knows the safety behind the pressure cannot play up. They have to keep everything in front of him. So a number of times he hit that. The other thing that stood out was, you know, several times when he ended up hitting the running back, that was his fourth read on his progression. And a number of those plays to the running back ended up getting first downs or good yardage. So that's not his first look. And yeah, some people call it a check down, but in those cases, you look at where he's starting at, you know, in some cases, the top half of the field, he gets his two route read. And there's been times in the past where he stops. If he doesn't have that, he'll pull the ball down. But he went all the way through. He read the backside receiver. That wasn't there. And then he checked to the running back as his fourth read. So I haven't seen him look this comfortable in his progressions. And, you know, I think it's a credit to the game plan and, you know, probably his maturity and having a, you know, spreading it around. I mean, look at the number of receivers that caught balls. That's also another, I think, example of him going through his progressions.
Yeah, to your point, 10 receivers getting catches on this game. I've harped in the past some frustrations about, you know, they focus in on one or two receivers primarily and just not distributing the ball enough. And here they get 10 guys with receptions. Just incredible. On the day, Tanner Morgan, 23 of 26 for 268 yards, three touchdowns, just phenomenal, no interceptions. And you know, I caught that comment as well, Ryan, about not saying, citing that he was not particularly mobile. to which I thought to myself, you literally have like 45-ish game tapes, and you didn't draw the conclusion that Tanner Morgan is like, he's like, to your point, he's not Adrian Martinez, right? No one's going to argue that, but he's also not like lead footed by any stretch of the imagination.
He's no Spencer Petras in the pocket.
There you go. Very good. Very good analogy there. Comparison. So let's talk a little bit about the passing game. We knew that Chris Altman-Bell was going to be down, and we already mentioned 10 receivers. Here's one thing that caught my eyes, fellas. The thing that we harped on last year was, hey, Michael Brown Stevens, hey, Daniel Jackson, you guys got to learn how to win contested catches. I saw that in this game. I hope this is a trend and not a mirage and not just a flash in the pan, Derek. But, you know, they were winning contested catches. Is this a coming out party for Daniel Jackson? You know, two touchdowns, et cetera, right?
Yeah. You know, as we mentioned with that tight man coverage, Michigan State was banking on the fact that either Tanner was not going to be able to throw into that tight coverage, or that they weren't going to come down with those contested catches. I mean, that's what tight man coverage calls for. And, you know, I think that part of it, you know, again, Tanner was on, he was hitting his spots, going through his progressions, but I was impressed by the route running from the Gopher wide receivers as a core across the board, all of them. I don't want to discount it too much, but I wasn't terribly impressed with the back four of Michigan State. You know, again, if you're going to stay in single man coverage, you have to have confidence and believe that you're going to be able to cover those guys one-on-one. And, you know, some of their breaks, again, a little bit late, weren't real tight downfield. But again, I think that's also credit to the Gopher wide receivers. And, you know, the route running to me is what jumped out. I know Ryan and I talked about, Ryan can talk about Daniel Jackson, but I mean, one I'll call out, you know, Dalen Wright early in the game. He has to get an inside release. He's on the split side, has to get an inside release against a corner who's playing with an inside shade. So he's got no safety help. That's really difficult to do. You have to get a good get off and a good jab step. He did it with no problem. So I think overall as a group, they definitely stepped up, you know, had a great day, obviously. And I think route running was the key to it.
Yeah, I'll get into Daniel Jackson here in a second, Luke. I just wanted to say one more final point on Tanner Morgan. Again, you look on his day. We've mentioned it, 23 of 26. Well, I would also mention, it's not like he was captain checkdown. On the day, and this is data from Pro Football Focus, Tanner was 13 of 15 of throws 10-plus yards down the field for 199 yards and two touchdowns. So we're talking about throwing past the sticks, 15 of your 26 attempts, and you have an adjusted completion percentage of something around 85-90%. That's pretty dang good, man. I mean, I don't know what else you can ask for from a collegiate quarterback, and that's kind of been the way he's been playing all season. But I think Daniel Jackson to me was the one where it was just, you wanted to know who was going to take Chris Altman-Bell's snaps, and that was one of the big things we had talked about, Luke, was it going to be Michael Brown Stevens or Daniel Jackson? Daniel Jackson last year was Minnesota's primary slot receiver. Well, in 2020, I believe it was Michael Brown Stevens. Daniel Jackson had missed the first two games of the season with an injury, just came back last week. Well, we found out that Daniel Jackson is essentially going to assume those outside snaps that kept Michael Brown Stevens and Clay Geary in the slot. And you saw Daniel Jackson with those two touchdowns. He gets a clean release on that one at the front pylon, back shoulder throw, comes down, toe taps, beautiful. But you look at that third touchdown pass where – so the route is called a fade stop, where Minnesota's, I believe, within the 5-yard line, and Jackson towards the bottom of your screen gets a release like he's going to the back pylon. Oh, which, by the way, Derek, he would have been open there. But then he slams that right foot into the ground and comes back right towards the front pylon. And the amount of separation that he made there, yeah, that's going to get it done against a lot of Big Ten teams. Now, to Derek's point, this is not a particularly great Michigan State secondary. I truly understand that. But it's so tough to do what Minnesota did on the road in a Big Ten environment where, I'll mention again, they haven't won in a long time. And it wasn't just one guy. I truly believe, Luke, that the pass-catching core really couldn't have played any better. We saw Michael Brown Stevens, of all people, and I say this with peace and love to that family, that was the number one thing we had talked about with Brown Stevens the last couple of years, was coming down with contested catches. And I think we saw three of his six catches were contested, and I think they all went for first downs. And they were huge plays at the time. But to your point, it's not just Brown Stevens. It's not just Dalen Wright. Daniel Jackson, I mean, we saw Brevin Span Ford featured early on. Six different receivers with multiple catches. I don't have to be a football savant like Derek Burns to tell you, if you don't just have one option that people can take away on a given week, where AKA Charlie Jones from Purdue, who Minnesota plays next, it's going to be a lot more difficult to scheme up how you want to take away certain guys. Now, this is one game, it's one data point, part of 12 data points that Minnesota's guaranteed. And this is a Michigan State secondary that's not particularly great. But the amount of separation that Minnesota was getting, I cannot stress enough, and maybe and we can kick it back to Luke here, is the symbiotic relationship right now between Kirk Ciarrocca and Tanner Morgan cannot be humming any better than it is right now, because Kirk has Tanner playing incredibly confident. Tanner knows where he wants to go. He knows if it's not there, he can take off. And you're seeing, Derek, I remember one of Dalen Wright's first down catches in the third quarter, where Dalen, I mean, Minnesota gets the pass protect, and we'll get to the Minnesota moving company up front, who had a pretty dang good day, I would say, against what is a good Michigan State run defense and a good Michigan State defensive line. But Kirk Ciarrocca schemes Dalen Wright wide open behind the linebackers. He knows they're going to be sitting there in zone. He has the slot receiver run off the play side safety and corner. I mean, it's almost like having good football coaches is a really good thing. And having a competent and pretty dang good offensive coordinator, play caller, and quarterbacks coach in Kirk Ciarrocca, who knows what the strengths of Tanner Morgan are, and he can tailor that to this offense, is a really good thing for what has been a very explosive offense. I mean, Luke, we're talking about a passing offense on the day. 9 passing plays of 15-plus yards.
Yeah.
And I believe, and if this is correct, and which I would believe it's going to be on the stat broadcast here, 7 of those passes came on first down. So it's not just Mike Sanford, let's inside zone left, inside zone right on first down. Minnesota wasn't afraid to throw the ball if that's what the box was giving them. And I cannot tell you how refreshing it is to actually just see what the defense is giving you. If it's even in the box, AKA 6 guys from Minnesota blocking 6 guys from Michigan State, yeah, you should run it. But if it's +1, you have the personnel on the outside and you have a quarterback playing at a level right now where you should throw the ball every time.
Yeah. Kudos to Nick Kallerup getting his first touchdown, made a good adjustment and a real nice tight window throw by Tanner Morgan. Also, kudos to Lemeke Brockington with basically getting called for a penalty that wasn't on him.
Can we talk about that?
That was just...
I watched that back.
I watched it 3
Lemeke
times.
Lemeke is blocking number 0 for Michigan State.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, Lemeke Brockington wears number 0 for Minnesota. And I have it in my GIF rewind on gopherillustrated.com, which, oh, by the way, it's $1 for 30 days. He gets hands to the face twice. And then the flag comes out. And then at the very end, Lemeke gets hands back at the Michigan State. But there is no possible way you can tell me that they didn't just say, yeah, hands to the face, number 0. And the referee just took a look behind him, and it was Lemeke Brockington standing there and not the Michigan State DB. That is absolutely inexcusable.
Yeah, that was really bad. And then the other thing I want to highlight is every single running, well, I shouldn't say every single, because I don't know that others played besides Bryce Williams, Trey Potson, Mo Ibrahim, all had receptions on the day. That's something that we've clamored for a while. Love to see that happening. So, let's talk a little bit about the offensive line here. Pass pro, great. Not a sack given up on the day. Just phenomenal showing from this group. Again, we can't overlook the fact, Ryan, that this is a completely remade offensive line with basically, I guess Arian Tirisari came back, but John Michael Schmidt's really the only returner that started last season. The fact that they're able to do this with a combination of of transfers, and then you've got Axel Rushmeyer that mixed in a decent amount last year. But man, just the way they've brought this offensive line together, they're really looking good so far.
Yeah, I think everybody wanted to see what this offensive line was going to look like against Big Ten competition, you know, along with the rest of the team. You know, great success the first three games, but how are they going to look against a Big Ten team? And then, as Ryan mentioned, the Michigan State back four on defense, maybe not as good. The front four, very good. Very good defensive line for Michigan State. Front seven, you know, as a whole, pretty good. And overall, I thought the offensive line did very, very well, particularly the center and both guards. Excellent game from the middle three, picking up movement in both the run and pass game. I would say the tackles struggled a little bit to adjust to the more athletic, faster defensive ends. Ariante in particular, I think, has to lower his pad level a little bit, shorten his steps. You know, he whiffed on a few of them, but he is playing a very, very good defensive end that Ryan mentioned earlier in Windham and Windman. And, you know, so a little bit of recalibration happens when you step up to Big Ten play. But, you know, overall, excellent job. I think the difference to me, I was texting Ryan earlier, is I think this group, which we saw in the non-conference, but it's really been confirmed in this first Big Ten game, this group handles movement better.
Yes.
than any in the last, you know, few years. They're probably not yet at the level of being, you know, a strong, you know, group that forces their will, and, you know, it becomes a game of attrition, you know, in terms of that type of play. But the athleticism and movement is there. So their ability to pass off stunts and twists and get to the second level, they're doing it quicker. They look better in that phase, and that's going to help. I think you're going to see, you know, in the running game, which has been good, you know, traditionally here the last few years, I think that lends to having more explosive gains because you're getting that offensive line up to the second level quicker. So that's what jumps out to me. It's a more athletic group. We saw that in the first three games, but I think that was confirmed. And those are the things that jump out, is just this group is, they're quick, they're sharp with their reads, and the athleticism is good.
It's so strange to see a Gopher offensive line this early in the season, because a lot of people are going to want to make comparisons between this 2022 team and the 2019 one. I get that both were very talented, but I just remember back to that 2019 offensive line in September specifically, really struggling with stunts and twists. That's what was killing them against South Dakota State, Georgia Southern, among others. And I look at this offensive line from Minnesota, different personnel, I'd say lacking in experience like that 2019 was, especially working with one another. And that has not been an issue at all. Tanner Morgan has been very clean in that pocket. Now, I understand that New Mexico State and, you know, a lot of these teams in the non-conference aren't good football teams, sure. But they threw a lot of stunts and twists. Even last year, what gave Minnesota a lot of issues in those games that they lost? Well, against Bowling Green, it was stunts and twists. Or against Illinois, Ryan Walters gave a lot of different things for that offensive line to handle, and they couldn't handle it. Well, you have a Remington candidate to center, who's, I think, the best one Minnesota's had since 2006 when Greg Esslinger was here. But you have, while they are old guys on the interiors, they're all brand new working together. And especially against a front like Michigan State had, again, I can't say enough, I was impressed by Jacoby Windman. And I understand that Jacob Slade, they're all Big Ten defensive tackle, missed the game. But there are still big, long athletes on that Michigan State defense. I mean, they have recruited well, and you could see it with the bodies they have there. And yeah, Tanner Morgan had pressure on him a couple times, which, can we talk about the, I believe it was number 26 for Michigan State, turns the corner, rips off the helmet of Tanner Morgan, thinks no one notices, and starts celebrating. I thought, I tweeted, I was, does he think cameras don't exist? Does he think no one saw him rip off the helmet of a quarterback in the day and age of 2022? I still have question marks about Quinn Carroll. With speed rushers at times, absolutely. Ariante Ursary, the same thing. But the way that this unit has gelled together, and especially with the tight ends and the run game, because we got to talk a little bit about Mole and everything that's got to entail there. But, I mean, I think Brevin Spanford deserves a lot of credit, because the way he's blocking right now with physicality is something like we haven't seen in 19, 20, 21. I mean, he's gone from being average I think, in the run game, to maybe below average in the last couple of seasons, to he's an asset. And you look at on the GIF rewind on Gopher Illustrated and some of these long runs, that's Brevin Spann Ford setting the edge, or Brevin Spann Ford getting run behind. I know he's an asset in the passing game, but the fact that he's adding to his repertoire, that he is a willing and pretty good blocker at 6'7", I mean, I give him a lot of credit, fellas.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that as well. I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, I was thinking about, you know, how does he improve so much when we saw so little previously? And you wonder if the fact that like a Co-Keefe makes a 53-man roster with basically being, you know, just an all-world blocker, had anything to do with that. And like, you go, hey, if I can block a little bit, I might have a future here because I got some of these ball skills too. But I, you know, in the end of the day, he is drastically improved. I do think, as you mentioned, Ryan, we do need to talk about the running game. You know, all three running backs were pretty efficient on the day. Obviously, Mo, 22 carries, 103 yards, did get dinged up there, had one touchdown, past Darrell Thompson for the all-time rushing touchdown leader. So, you know, as the season goes on, we're going to have to talk about retiring his number and the whole nine yards there. But I thought from the rushing attack in total, you know, really saw some good things. They did have to run into some loaded boxes at times, but for the most part, there was a lot of balance, Derek, both passing and running, and I thought they took advantage of the opportunities. It maybe wasn't the huge numbers, per se, but still very efficient, 5 yards per carry on the day.
Yeah, I thought they matched the physicality. The running back position matched the physicality of Michigan State's front seven, and that's not just Mo. I thought that all the running backs that were in there. The other thing I've noticed, it seems to me this year, not even beyond the Michigan State game, I want to give kudos to the running back coach. It seems to me that they're being taught now to read the safety, which is not something that an inexperienced running back can do. Usually when a running back takes the handoff, he's reading, obviously, the line of scrimmage. He's looking to find a hole. And if you're good and if you're experienced, you're looking beyond at the second level. But they're looking to me like they're reading the safety. And if you notice this year, they tend to bounce a lot of the plays with good success. And I think that's being taught that they're going to read the safety fit. And if the safety fits inside, that's when they bounce it outside on the zone running plays. So you've seen that not just with Mo, but over and over again with the running backs. And that's been a nice wrinkle for them that really hasn't been there previously to this year. So it's, I think, a credit to the fact that they have a lot of experienced guys back there, because taking a handoff 3 or 4 yards in the backfield and reading a safety who's 12 yards downfield isn't easy to do. But you can see that they're having a tendency to bounce it out of the backside more, and they only typically do that when they know the safety's made his fit. So they're having success there. And I mean, that's a huge credit to the running backs coach, to me. So across the board, again, not huge numbers in the running game, but a really physical Michigan State defense. And I thought they, you know, especially after Ryan mentioned when they went too high safety, you know, Minnesota was right there running into even boxes with good success.
Well, something like we've talked down on the Michigan State passing defense, and I think rightfully so. Michigan State's run defense coming into this game had been averaging under 3 yards a carry against them on 100 rushing attempts. Minnesota goes into East Lansing and rushes for 5 yards a carry on 48 attempts. Like, was it easy? Not like it was in the first three games. Absolutely. Mo Ibrahim had to earn all 103 of those yards. Trey Potts had to earn all 72. I mean, I think we've even seen development from Bryce Williams, which credit to him, where, I mean, there were parts early in his career we talked about on this podcast, you know, it's about vision, the game slowing down. You're starting to see Bryce Williams, that if Mo's got to maybe take some snaps off this upcoming weekend with what it looked like his left ankle got rolled up on. I would say, by the way, sounds like, you know, there is a brace on that ankle potentially, but sounds like he participated fully on Sunday in Minnesota's practice. So I'm not incredibly worried about Mo Ibrahim, but again, I don't know if you want to manage him with a bye week coming up after Purdue. We'll see what PJ Fleck, and we'll see how that ankle continues to go now 48 hours away from that initial injury. But I just can't say enough about, I mean, Mo Ibrahim is just going to forever be the yards after contact king, and he's the king of falling forward. He's the king going through first contact. You look at be a Pro Football Focus, I'd love to look at these numbers and kind of see how they stack up in the Big Ten. Mo Ibrahim is number four in the Big Ten in yards per carry after contact on every rush. That's pretty dang good. And he is number one in the Big Ten in total yards after contact among all running backs. And if you haven't noticed, this is a really good year in the Big Ten for running backs, in my opinion. You have guys like Chase Brown, Braylon Allen, Blake Corum. You got the guys out at Ohio State. I think Maryland's got a couple of pretty good running backs. Evan Hall from Northwestern, among other ones. I mean, this is a good year. And to be number one in yards after contact in the Big Ten, I think you're going to be sitting in a pretty good spot. But even just to kind of round out the point, I want to go back to that first drive. I think it was started in the fourth quarter there for Minnesota, where they ran the ball 14 straight times. And they just, it was unbelievable. I mean, Michigan State knew what they wanted to do. Minnesota essentially told them what they wanted to do. And they marched the ball all the way down the field, just ran it 14 straight times against a good run defense, and they couldn't stop them. I mean, that's just, it was a lot of Trey Potts, some Bryce Williams, but this offensive line, to Derek's point, you're seeing them get to the second level a lot earlier than what we did at points last season. And again, it's just, this entire offense is just working together so well, which is why they have scored 183 points through their first four games. And they're, I mean, it's just chunk play after chunk play, and it's just so fun to watch.
All right, I do want to add on to your Bryce Williams comment. He has looked much better in years past. You know, it always seemed that, you know, that he had to kind of get a few carries under his belt before he would be able to have a little bit more vision, or, you know, have some success. He's taking advantage of those opportunities. He's again pass blocking quite well as well, and mixing in the run game. Kudos to him. And let's not overlook the fact that all three of these running backs are coming off of injuries last year. Obviously, well documented that Mo comes off the Achilles injury, but also you've got Potts and Williams coming back. The other thing I want to comment on real quickly is the sustained success is also shown in the distance and the number of plays the Gophers are having to go. The Gophers nationally rank in the ranked in the top five in Echol, which is, you know, basically sustained success on drives. They had possessions that yielded in points of 10 plays and 75 yards, 9 plays and 77 yards, 12 plays, 66 yards. What was the other one I wanted to point out? Oh, and then the 12 play 90 yard one, right? So, and then the 15 play 76, like, that's good. I mean, Iowa would be dying to have that kind of success right now with their offense.
Would be dying. I mean, you look at third downs, even Luke, Minnesota has converted 41 of their 52 third downs. They are number one in the Big Ten. And I would have to imagine they're number one in the country. They're converting 78% of their third downs. Again, I don't have to be a football savant to tell you, if you are going to convert 78% of your third downs on a given day, I hope you're going to win. And even look at this game against Michigan State. Minnesota's 10 of 12 on third down. And I think the interesting point in that is the average down and distance on those 12 third downs was over 5 yards. So these weren't a lot of gimmies. Minnesota was able to find a way to convert on these third downs. And it's why, to your point, Luke, they're putting up as many points as they are, is they continue to be efficient.
Yes.
I mean, we saw in the non-conference, when you convert 41 third downs in four games, you're going to have some that are third and short, obviously. But it's interesting because we've asked Kirk Ciarrocca about that, Minnesota's offensive coordinator, and he laughs and he goes, you know what the key to a good third down offense is? A good offense on first and second down so I can actually have a play sheet on third down. He's right. You have a lot longer play sheet on third and two or third and three than you do on third and nine or third and 10. Again, this doesn't have to be rocket science. It's football. I mean, peace and love. We're breaking down football. This isn't calculus four. And if they can continue to be efficient on early downs, they're going to continue to be efficient on the field. And that's why you continue to see them putting up as many points as they are. Luke, I believe Mark Crawford, Minnesota's punter, has 3 punts in 4 games. That's how good the offense has been.
Yes.
And I just don't want to take it for granted, because I have never seen a September like this from a Gopher offense. Where?
Well,
go ahead, Derek.
Well, I was gonna say. Sorry, I was gonna say. We've talked about how in the non-conference we said the approach had changed, and I was wondering, is this certainly the non-conference approach had changed, but I think some of that has carried over just in general. I think the approach has changed. And on offense, the thing that stands out to me is throwing on first down. Even before Mike Samford, if you go back to Kirk Schrock at 2019, they still were a run first team in most scenarios. And I think they were a lot more stubborn about running into loaded boxes. And I think what we've seen so far, again, it's four games. This could certainly change any game, but I think what we've seen so far is if teams are going to line up with a plus one box and a run fit, run down in distance and sell out to stop the run, this team has no problem dropping back and throwing the ball on first down. And I think that also is a key to helping the offensive line group with a pass rush, because you're definitely not going to see – you're going to see a much different pass rush on third and 15 than you are on first and 10. So I think that's helping the offensive line. And if they're able to, throw in and win those single coverage battles in the passing game, like you said, Ryan, you're going to set yourself up for manageable situations on second and third. But that, to me, is one thing that looks like it's changed in the approach.
Yeah, and there's nothing better than being unpredictable, right? Having the defense have to be honest. The defense has to show their cards pre-snap. You can try to disguise that, whatever, but it's the offense's responsibility to read that and then react. And right now, the Gophers are doing a good job of taking advantage of what the defense is giving them, and ultimately, they're having success, and I hope this continues going forward. Again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, as we said earlier, the Goal Line Club has their lunches. Their first one is going to be on Friday for ahead of the Purdue game. $30 for members, $45 for non-members. Check-in begins at 11:30 at Jack's Cafe.
Yeah, and the beautiful part about Jack's is it's in Northeast Minneapolis. So if you work in downtown, it's just a short drive up University. There is parking there, free parking. So you're not going to have to worry about trying to find where to go. And it's really cool that these luncheons at Jack's Cafe, again, Bill, who owns Jack's, great guy, big Gopher fan. You get to be with other Gopher fans. You get to listen to hopefully a coach explain what Minnesota has done. I'm sure they would go through the other Michigan State film from last week, but you get to get excited about the homecoming game this upcoming weekend. So go reserve your tickets today. Go to goalineclub.org, click on events on top of the page. As Luke said, $30 for members, $45 for non-members.
Legacy and Life Law Firm LLC out of Illinois brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio, but they're not just out of Illinois. They can cover Minnesota as well. So if you need to get your stuff in order, get your affairs in order, go to legacyinlifelaw.com/GGR. Ryan knows a thing or two about getting your affairs in order.
Yes, especially when you get to be my age of the ripe 30 years old, you need to have a will, especially if you have children. If you don't have children like I do, you have a house, you have a car, you have other important things that you want to make sure that get down to who you need to get to. Get your life in order. So go to legacyinlifelaw.com/GGR, as in Gopher Gridiron Radio, and help yourself today.
Okay, let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense on the day. They gave up 7 points. And that's all in like the last, minute and 28 seconds, Ryan? I think something like that. It was absolutely
starting defense, Luke, has not given up a touchdown in through four games.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. This is a Michigan State offense that had their best receiver back. The one thing I wanted to note, I'm forgetting the name, Jarek Broussard. Boy, poor guy has lost to the Gophers by a blowout in two consecutive years now, one with Colorado and now with Michigan State. He had six carries and 23 yards. All in all, the Gophers, even when they were starting to give up yardage, found a way to have opportunistic turnovers, getting two interceptions on the day, and I think one fumble, three turnovers in all. Ryan, you've been asking for this, and this has been a point of emphasis all year, and they're able to get those turnovers.
I mean, finally, they get a little bit of Iowa turnover look, which we'll get to Iowa's unsustainable two defensive touchdowns yet again a little bit later in the show. But for as many excuses as we could legitimately give about Michigan State's defense, I have none to give you about Michigan State's offense, because it was – they returned their best receiver, who was an all-Big Ten kid from last year, Jaden Reed. And it's not like he was coming back from like a high ankle. He had a cut on his back that somehow forced him to miss the Washington game last week. But I would say this. I would put Jaden Reed, Keon Coleman, Trey Mosley, and their big tight end, Daniel Barker, against any other four pass catchers that Minnesota is going to see for the rest of the schedule. I think they were that talented. And I think Peyton Thorne's a good player too. I mean, Peyton Thorne last year threw 27 touchdowns to only 10 picks for over 300 yards. I mean, Peyton Thorne's not some Spencer Petras, Joe Schmo quarterback in the Big Ten. Peyton Thorne had been playing well. And what Joe Rossi did to him and just did to this entire, I mean, we can even talk about the rushing. I mean, Jarek Broussard and, yes, Jalen Berger was a little bit banged up. But, Luke, to your point, Jarek Broussard is the 2020 Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. He's not a Joe Schmo. He's a talented player. And Minnesota held their top two running backs to 36 yards on 10 carries. Peyton Thorne had no idea what to do with the ball all game. And I give Joe Rossi a lot of credit, because I don't pretend to be a defensive savant, but to me it looked like what Joe Rossi wanted to do was change the look. And what I mean by that is, you look at on some of these key plays for Minnesota defensively, especially on third down, Minnesota would change their pre-snap look versus their post-snap look. Now, what do I mean? Well, pre-snap, say Minnesota is going Mike Zimmer-esque, which they did at times. They show two guys in the A-gap alongside both the centers. They show six guys potentially coming at him at the line of scrimmage. Well, the ball is snapped, and Minnesota drops three of them into coverage. Three of them rush the quarterback. Minnesota just sits back with eight. And that's where you saw Peyton Thorne on a couple of those first drives just check it down. Well, that's not going to eventually win you a game, because you're going to get off the field, and Minnesota was sure tackling. You saw him on that fourth down play try to force it over the head of Justin Wally. Justin Wally does a good job of keeping his eyes on the quarterback, sitting back into his zone, knowing where the soft spot probably is behind him, high points the ball. Or you even see just how on that first drive to start the second half, I mean, I think Jay Johnson is a pretty good offensive coordinator for Michigan State. You knew he was going to make some adjustments. But the beauty of a Joe Rossi defense is they're – as they were last season, Minnesota last season in 2021 was the number one defense in the country at not allowing big plays. Well, what the result of that is, if you have to allow a college offense to go 8, 10, and in this case, on the 12th play of the drive, Thomas Rush just makes a hustle play where he just screams down the line of scrimmage, hustles to the quarterback, comes in with the right club, hits the ball out to Justin Wally, and Justin Wally's only standing there because he works his tail off to shed the block, gets his eyes on the quarterback, sees the ball spike into the turf, and he's there ready and willing. It doesn't have to be incredibly difficult. And especially with collegiate offenses, more times than not, they beat themselves. Look around the other Big Ten West offenses. A lot of them are the kings of beating themselves. And so that's where, if this kind of sustainability in terms of making teams go down the field 10, 12 plays, they're eventually going to beat themselves. And that's what has been the case once again in this game. I will say again, Derek, I know I'm long-winded. You're going to have to get used to it if you're a new listener. There are no excuses for this Michigan State offense because, like I said, the quarterback's a good player. The running back, one was banged up. The other one was a Pac-12 player of the year. And their receiving options were legit, and they were healthy. And Minnesota just schemed a way to take them away.
It seemed like Minnesota had the defensive staff had done a really good job of scouting how Michigan State handled pre-snap pressure looks, because to your point, Minnesota played a lot of zone, which is normal. It's characteristic of them, but they in the first half, it took Michigan State a whole half to adjust to Minnesota's pre-snap pressure looks. And you pointed it out, and it's spot on. Minnesota gave a lot of pre-snap pressure looks because they knew that Michigan State was going to either with a called play or an audible, call short passing routes. Basically, you say, okay, pressures are coming. We're going to call short passing routes. We can get something out quick. Well, what Minnesota continued to do snap after snap was at the snap, they would bail into sticks coverage, stick zone coverage. So those short passing routes and short crossers don't work against sticks coverage. That's what it's designed to stop. So play after play on series after series, Michigan State could get nothing going in the passing game because of, you know, the games that Joe Rossi and his staff were playing. Now, in the second half, to your point, they adjusted and they wanted to press the ball farther downfield, and they actually had some success, but they couldn't sustain the drive. So, you know, it was a great chess match, a good game plan, I thought, well scouted by the defensive coaching staff. And, you know, beyond the scheme, I would just make a comment that this year's defense, the team speed looks to have improved across the board. And I think that's not just on things like blitzes and pursuit and things like that, but their ability to read, commit, and then happen to bail and recover is important. And that's one thing that stood out to me. So whether it's, you know, bailing on, you know, after play action, getting back into the zone, you know, fits for the linebackers, or as you mentioned, the defensive line, Thomas Rush, being able to get, you know, commit to a run and then, you know, inside and then bounce outside and chase down the line of scrimmage. Those type of things is where the team speed looks to be a difference maker this year with the defense. And again, we're talking about measuring now the team speed of the Gopher defense, not against an FCS or lower level group of five opponent, but against a good Big Ten opponent with a lot of team speed.
All right. I wanted to bring up the same point you both have made, you know, the pre-snap versus post-snap. And one thing that I noted, and I didn't chart the game, but I did rewatch it. And I also didn't make a GIF rewind, which is phenomenal on Gopher Illustrated. But what I did notice was, I think this was somewhat strategic, and I think that Michigan State panicked a bit, was it was a 3rd and 8, the second drive for Michigan State. They blitz Ryan Stapp. He gets that sack for them, and, you know, they showed pressure continuing on from then, but didn't always bring pressure, right? And they ended up, like you said, playing to the sticks. And then ultimately, I think Michigan State just panicked because they didn't know how to handle it, Derek.
Well, yeah, what happened on that play, and this is where the call was a good call, is it was actually only a 4-man rush, but they just did a simple exchange. So they brought a secondary player and they dropped another defender into coverage. So as a quarterback, when you see someone coming from the secondary or the second level, your mind clicks over to, okay, they're bringing an extra defender, I've got to get rid of the ball quickly. But when you're actually just doing an exchange and you're dropping one of those front defenders into zone coverage, there's nowhere to throw the ball in those short coverages. So the bottom line is, what happens is you hang on to the ball longer, and the you know, the secondary player gets home.
Or even on that play, I do want to highlight Jalen Logan Redding.
Okay.
Defensive lineman for Minnesota. He gets internal pressure, or interior pressure, I can say, on Peyton Thorne. And that's what draws Peyton Thorne's attention there, is he sees Jalen Logan Redding getting into his face. And he's focused on that while Ryan Stapp is blitzing off his right side. Ryan Stapp beats the running back in pass protection, but Thorne's got no idea he's there because he's so worried about Jalen Logan Redding. So while Ryan Stapp does get home, does a good job of getting there on third down, Minnesota gets off the field. For as much credit as Ryan Stapp should get, I think Jalen Logan Redding deserves some, or even you see the intuition and just the intellectual ability from Danny Strigow. I mean, Orono Wrestling, state champion. He reads the screen. He knows something must be wrong because I'm seeing offensive linemen go past me. Oh, it might be a screen. Gets his left hand on the ball, gets the interception, turns over any last hopes that Michigan State has. These aren't some exceptional, I mean, we're not talking about the most beautifully designed things. It's just about doing your job. But that's a Joe Rossi defense, is if you just do your job, guys like Mariano Sorry-Mary can come through and just clean it up. I mean, I thought he played exceptionally well in run defense. Once again, leads the team in tackles. Tyler Newman, I know he'd probably want to have one or two back where he missed in the open field, but he's got 7 tackles on the day. This is just, again, you look at through 3 quarters, let's just say, because that's when Minnesota's starting defense was definitely on the field. You allowed Michigan State's offense 138 total yards. Peyton Thorne was 14 of 20 for 105 yards and two picks. That's 5 yards per attempt. That's horrible. But that's exactly what you want if you're Joe Rossi's defense. And last point, Luke, do you know how many third down conversions through the first month of the season, through four games, Minnesota's defense has given up?
No, not a clue, but it's under 10.
Derek, any idea?
I have no clue.
Minnesota's defense has given up 6 third down conversions against them in 4 games. The next closest in the Big Ten, Rutgers with 14. They have given up only 6 third down conversions. They are 6 of 42 opposing offenses are. That is 14% of third downs against this Gopher football defense through the first 4 weeks have been converted. I don't have to be a genius to tell you, if you're getting off the field on third down 86% of the time as a defense, you're probably going to win a lot of football games. And now they're going to be tested again with what I think is the best passing guru in the conference, or at least the Big Ten West, I would say, and Jeff Brohm coming to town with what I think is potentially the best quarterback in the Big Ten West, although Tanner Morgan would love to have something to say about it. And then what I do think is the best wide receiver just in general that Minnesota will play all season with Charlie Jones, who is going nuclear. They're going to be tested again. Mm-hmm. Their passing defense will be, especially on third down. But there's no denying it's just a special, special month. I'll say again, this is a Gopher football defense. The starting defense has not given up a touchdown yet. And Luke, I just think back to the early tenure of Rob Smith with PJ Fleck. And now I look at where they're at just starting or getting into here, year 6. I mean, what a turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up Danny Strigout, and I just want to bring him up again. Like, this kid really seems like he's kind of breaking out. He's making some big plays. I believe he's backing up Thomas Rush, right? But in his opportunity, he's really making the most of him. You know, you might have stereotypes about what state, you know, championship wrestlers are, but I wasn't expecting him to have hands like he did. What a phenomenal interception. Again, just another young guy that they were able to identify, get into the program, and it looks like they've gotten a good one, Ryan.
To your point, I mean, I'm excited about this defensive line. I think that's been pretty clear. We've talked about it for weeks, and the beautiful part about it is, for as many guys that are making plays on that defensive line, the only guy from their 8-man rotation that they lose for next season is Thomas Rush. And when you lose Thomas Rush, you get Austin Booker getting more snaps in year 3. That's exciting. Where is the Big Ten, specifically the West, won or lost on any given season, as we've seen through the last 10, 15 years? That's up front. Where is Minnesota winning consistently right now?
Up front.
They're winning up front. So that's why, through 4 games, they have a point differential of what it is, you know, 150 plus or 150-ish points. Like, they aren't just skimping by these teams. They're decimating them, and it starts up front, and that's what has to leave you optimistic about the future, especially defensively.
So defensive line, just clear this up for me. So they get Kyler Baugh and Darnell Jeffries back?
Yeah, they both have an extra year of eligibility. Trill Carter can come back. Jalen Logan Redding and Ja Joyner, they would have another year of eligibility, and then Danny Strigow's only in his 3rd year.
Caps Customs and the Angel Foundation bring you Gopher Gridiron Radio. If you are interested in supporting cancer, people that are going through cancer, I can speak firsthand as my dad had cancer when I was younger. And financially, that can be a strain, especially when you have a breadwinner that's dealing with cancer. So support the Angel Foundation by buying a hat from Caps Customs.
And to go to capscustoms.com, it's CAPPS customs.com. Tanner Morgan is someone that has partnered with them. I knew his father, Ted Morgan, really well. And all of the proceeds from these hats at capscustoms.com go directly to the Angel Foundation. They offer relief to adults with cancer and their loved ones with whatever they need. And I can assure you, I have a couple of these hats. They got maroon and gold ones if you're looking for Gopher styles. They got some camo ones. They've even got a really nice beanie. So that's where, again, if you want to help support cancer patients and their loved ones, go to CAPSCustoms.com. That is CAPPSCustoms.com.
Okay, want to do a quick segment here just on, we talked all off season about how we felt this was a pivotal game, kind of a launching point of what the season could be. You know, the Gophers do end up winning. They're now 4-0 on the season. We knew from the very beginning that the non-conference slate was not particularly strong. We didn't know how much we were going to learn. We all thought that Michigan State was pretty good, and this was a big game for them as well. They're now 2-2 with a loss now to Minnesota and to Washington. But you know, this is kind of the launching point. You look at the rest of the remainder of the schedule, and Ryan, I don't think it's any secret that you picked the Gophers to win outright. You were one of two people in the Cleveland.com poll, and there's a healthy schedule ahead of them, and the Gophers look like the front runner.
Yeah, I hate to take September victory laps because I would be wrong more times than not, but there's no denying that through the first third of the season, you look at the Big Ten West and you look at what team is playing heads and tails above everybody else right now, and that's Minnesota. And why this Michigan State game, Luke, that we talked about was so pivotal was it's a crossover game. Why does that matter? Well, you get three of them. And you look at the three crossover games from Minnesota coming into the season, you thought Michigan State was maybe going to be a better team. They were ranked. I mean, 2 weeks ago, folks, they were ranked as a top 10 team in the country. Now they've obviously fallen out of the poll, but this is, again, a place they haven't won since 2006. I thought if Minnesota was going to win the Big Ten West, they had to go at least 2-1 in their crossover games. Now you look at the two remaining crossover games from Minnesota. They have to travel to Penn State for a whiteout game, which if both teams continue on their trajectory before that game, that is going to grab a ton of national attention. And then the week after that, they play a Rutgers team that defensively I think is pretty good, and they have one of the best punters in America, but offensively they are absolutely broken. Why that matters and why I say 2-1, well, look at the crossover games for Wisconsin and Iowa, the two teams outside of maybe Illinois that we can get to that are going to have a serious chance at the West too. Well, you saw one of the crossover games for Wisconsin this weekend, and they absolutely got destroyed in the horseshoe. I mean, Wisconsin's got to find a way to obviously go 2-1 as well. And that's where, let me look and see what their other cross. They've got Maryland, who I think showed well against Michigan. Now, we'll see what that game looks like. It'll be in Camp Randall, but they've also got to travel to East Lansing here in a couple weeks. So I think Wisconsin can get there. But Iowa is the team that continues to somehow find a way to win with one of the most pathetic offenses I've seen in the modern day. Well, when you score two touchdowns on defense every given week, that helps. But the point I'm making here is Iowa's got Michigan and Ohio State left on the schedule. Conference games, ones that they're not going to be favored in, including the one this weekend where Michigan travels into town. Now, I don't know that, you know, Michigan is a top five team that like they're rated. I think they certainly showed some vulnerabilities against Maryland, especially J.J. McCarthy with his lack of deep throwing ability. But there's no denying that. I think that offensive line is pretty good. Blake Corum's pretty good. And for Minnesota, it's funny. Again, one of the reasons, Luke, and you know it, I talked about it, why I picked Minnesota to win the West, was this: how would the schedule set up? Again, you look at the month of October now for Minnesota. They faced Purdue for homecoming this weekend, a Purdue team that can't seem to really get out of its own way in close games. One that we'll see if Aiden O'Connell's going to play in that game. I'll tell you this much. I'm also glad that Minnesota's got a bye week before Illinois, because I'm definitely okay admitting I was wrong. I mean, in that 10-2 that I picked Minnesota to do before the season, I had them losing to Nebraska. Well, I will admit I was incredibly wrong about the Cornhuskers, and I was way too low on Illinois. Because what future Colorado head football coach Ryan Walters has got going there defensively, along with Chase Brown and Isaiah Williams on offense, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see, number one, Illinois beat Wisconsin in Madison this weekend, or take a really good swing at Iowa as well. I'm glad that Minnesota's got a bye week to prepare for them. Compared to Illinois facing Wisconsin and Iowa the 2 weeks before, you've got the Penn State game on the schedule. But even look at what we thought was going to be a very tough November, fellas. Now, Nebraska is going to look a lot different. They just fired their defensive coordinator. Rutgers, I mean, they're not a very good football team. Nebraska, not a very good football team. Northwestern, we can talk about, should Pat Fitzgerald be on the hot seat? My answer is absolutely, because it looks like Mike Hankowitz was the thing that made that thing turn for Pat Fitzgerald. They lost to Miami of Ohio 17-14, and then you end the season with senior day against Iowa and on the road at Wisconsin. Is Minnesota going to continue to play as well as they have been the last four games, fellas? No. I don't know that any part of that is sustainable, but as long as you just continue to keep showing up each week, I just, the way that they're playing collectively, how many of these games are they not going to be favored in the remaining eight? I would imagine the only one would be Penn State. And if you're able to find a way to win 10 games in the West, you're going to find a way to Indianapolis, and that Rose Bowl dream will remain alive. I just would caution you. I'm excited. You're excited. Luke's excited. Derek's ecstatic. There's a lot of optimism, and rightfully so. There's a lot of time between now and then, but there's no denying, Derek, that what this Gopher football team has done in 2022 has been remarkable. But I think you would argue they've been doing things like this in spurts in 2019 and 2021. So seeing them do it in 2022 is not really a big revelation.
Yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit in the pre-production meeting about this, and I think, you know, just reacting to the reaction, you know, the people outside of the Minnesota program, you know, confirming how dominating of a win it was for Minnesota at Michigan State this weekend, and how they look to be playing as good as anybody in the West. And, you know, I think it's okay to evaluate the season to this point. It doesn't mean there aren't going to be difficult games. It doesn't mean we know what's going to happen in the rest of the season, but they look really good. And I think one of the things that I commented was, I still think there are a lot of people that seem kind of shocked and surprised. And at this point, Minnesota is showing what I believe to be the start of sustained success, meaning there are teams that have traditionally, and by traditionally meaning over decades, been, you know, helmet schools, and others that have been down and struggled. And you see some of those struggling teams that will pop up and have a breakout season every now and then. And more often than not, unfortunately, that doesn't result in sustained success. And I think what you're seeing here over the last handful of years is the start of sustained success. So, you know, I guess I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder as a Gopher fan at this point, that, you know, when people are, you know, shocked or surprised that Minnesota is off to a good start, you know, I get a little bit cynical about that and say, well, they had a really good 2019 season. They had a really good 2021 season. They ended with a convincing win against Wisconsin. They start off really, really hot in the non-conference. So I'm not as shocked that they played well and beat a good, I think, Michigan State team. So we'll see where we go from here. But it's just interesting to see the reaction. And again, a lot of season left to play. But I think, you know, at some point here, people might be, you know, less shocked when Minnesota beats conference opponents.
All right. So let's look at, you know, historically what we've seen since PJ Fleck's been here, just real quick. I think we can all agree that in 2019, that was kind of the coming out party for his teams, right? They go 11-2. They beat Auburn in the Outback Bowl. They're 7-2 in conference play, narrowly, you know, well, they got blown out by Wisconsin, but, you know, had a tie for first in the West, but narrowly missed going to Indy that year. But preceding that, fellas, you know, you're always going to evaluate a Big Ten coach on their Big Ten record. You know, a lot of these schools, Minnesota included, they schedule non-conference opponents that aren't always particularly tough, where they luck into a Colorado being down at their, you know, at their worst moment, where, you know, Colorado might be the worst Power 5 team in the country at the moment. But if you look, the preceding year is 2017, 2018, the PJ Fleck was 5-13 in Big Ten play. That's a 278 winning percentage. Not great, Bob. But conversely, look at that from 2019 on. He's 17-9. He currently sits 22-22. That's 500. And since 2019, he's 650 in Big Ten play. That's pretty good. And now I know that everyone's going to come back and say, well, it's the West. And I don't think you have to make an excuse that, like, hey, the Gophers are where they are. They're making the best of what they can, of what they can. But the other thing that I also want to note, since 2019, the Gophers are 11-5 in road games. That's also pretty good. And I think that's a sign, Derek, to support what you're saying, is like, these are some stats to follow up that, like, this team's been pretty good. They had a blip in 2020, that COVID year, where they were 3-4 in the Big Ten, but they have had some sustained success over the long term. Now, Ryan could tell us all about recruiting and all that, but, you know, to your point, Derek, they're definitely humming in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think that it's good to hear some of those stats to kind of back it up. And, 500 in the Big Ten, and for this program, is, it's been a long time, and especially over a 6-season period. So, it's absolutely trending in the right direction. It's not easy to get there. If you look at other programs that have turned around and then maintained success over a long period of time, this is kind of the trend you see. So I think the future looks bright at this point.
Yeah, and just to close out on that thought, we've seen Northwestern, for instance, win Big Ten West titles in recent memory, but they're usually doing it going worst to first. They haven't been able to sustain it over, a number of seasons. Now, Pat Fitzgerald, as Ryan said, maybe is worthy of being on the hot seat, but then again, he's brought them the most success they've probably seen in their football history. I don't know their football history as well as one should, but in the end, like, it feels like the Gophers are slowly finding that sustained success, and let's hope it lasts, and these bandwagon fans will become diehards like the rest of us.
And even if they just want to come along for the ride for the next 2 months, you're welcome. I mean, you're more than welcome to hang out. And I think a couple of notes I would say is, we've drawn some comparisons between the 19 and the 22 in the 2021 and the 2022 teams. Again, 19, they won 11 games. Last season, they won 9. Well, if you want to have a reason to maybe get a little bit more excited, in both of those Octobers, Minnesota went undefeated. Now, Penn State is going to be obviously the biggest test remaining on the schedule, it looks like. Again, we'll see what Iowa and Wisconsin look like in 6-7 weeks. I've been covering this team long enough to know they're going to look a lot different at the end of the season than what they currently look like in September. So it's tough to look too far ahead there. But, I mean, this is a team that under PJ Fleck in the last two, full real seasons of football in October has really started to peak. And so if this team somehow still hasn't peaked already, I think the recent history would show that Minnesota would. The only thing I want to touch on, Luke, before we look at the games from last week is, I'm not going to get up on a soapbox just yet about Minnesota being ranked 21st in the AP and 23rd in the coaches poll. Do I think Minnesota's incredibly low there? Yes. I mean, to be honest, I think Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press, who has Minnesota's AP vote, has it right. I think Andy's got them as like number 13 in the country right now. And I would be hard pressed as I look at this top 25 to find, as we go into now October, that there are, say, 15 other football teams playing as well as what Minnesota is right now. They are annihilating everyone. And my thing would be to AP voters and to the sports information directors that are doing the coaches poll, it's okay to admit you were wrong. Because I think, I said it last week, Luke, preseason polls or even polls before October are so incredibly stupid. And I say that as someone who votes for the Heisman Trophy. Like, what we think as a media going into the season and what actually happens are consistently very different things.
Ryan,
and you have to be willing to adapt and admit you were wrong. I mean, even on this podcast, Luke, 4 or 5 years ago, I was talking about how Mo Ibrahim was an average running back. I'm an idiot for saying that. Now, did I know I was going to be wrong at the time? No, that was my opinion. now I want him to have his – I mean, he's one of the greatest running backs to come through the University of Minnesota. We're going to be talking about probably in November hanging up his number. But I look at these teams in the top 25, and I've seen a couple of tweets where, again, I don't want to get soapboxy yet. Minnesota continues to take care of business before Penn State. I'll get real soapboxy then. But I've seen a couple of tweets saying if Minnesota was in the SEC, they'd be in the top 10 right now. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. I wouldn't fight you on that. But I just look at some of these teams that are ranked above Minnesota right now. And if you just look at what they have done through the first 4 weeks of the season, not what their logo is, not what conference they're from, what they did against their opponents, explain to me why Ole Miss is ranked 11th in the country. Other than they're in the SEC, Lane Kiffin is a cool football coach. I mean, they snuck past Troy by 18. They beat a Georgia Tech team that's going to fire their head coach, and they snuck past Tulsa by 8. I think Minnesota's schedule compared to theirs is very comparable. Why Kansas isn't ranked right now is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous with what they've done. Whereas, again, I don't want to get soapboxy. Do I think Minnesota's better than the 21st team in the country right now? I'll say it again. Find me 20 teams in college football that are playing better than what Minnesota is right now. Am I screaming, we want Bama? No. No, I'm not an idiot. I may be dumb, but I'm not an idiot. But if Minnesota takes care of business again against Purdue, they get through the bye week, and then they can take care of business against Illinois and Champaign. You cannot conceivably tell me a reason other than lack of effort, not watching the games, logo, or conference affiliation, that at that point, if Minnesota is undefeated going into Penn State, that they should not be a top 10 rated team in the country.
And Ryan, I just wanted to add one point on early season rankings, because we've definitely lamented that over the last couple weeks. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, although not official, I think it's pretty accepted that the purpose of early season rankings is television ratings. It's important for the networks to be able to say the number four team is playing the number six team on our network at 2:30 on Saturday. It helps the TV ratings. Now, that's okay, but I think the point you're making is I think people need to understand that. And furthermore, I think the people that are voting need to check their priors and be able to go back and say they were wrong when things don't shake out the way they thought they would. So early season rankings are absurd. I think everybody should just understand what the function of those are and really that hope that as we get into October that things correct and people are able to be objective when they go back and vote again.
And ultimately, it's going to be the college football playoff rankings that will come out in a couple of weeks are the only ones then what people will care about, and the AP and the coaches poll will go to the side. I understand that. But I can't help but think if Minnesota's logo was Ole Miss or Minnesota's logo was Tennessee right now, like, what are we really discussing other than people thought coming into the year they were going to be good? Or even, let's just say Oklahoma State. By the way, Oklahoma State is 3-0. You know who they've beaten? Central Michigan, Arizona State, who already fired their head coach, and then Arkansas Pine Bluff, and they are ranked as the number 9 team in the country. Like, is Oklahoma State a good football team? Yeah. But if you just look at the body of work that each one of these teams has done throughout the first month of the season, I'll say again, find me 15 better football teams than what Minnesota has put down for the first third of their season.
Longtime sponsor of the podcast, the Burns Insurance Agency, brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, you know firsthand how much Bill likes to shop, and he can shop for you in many different locations.
Yes. If you are located outside of the state of Minnesota, that's okay. He's licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Florida, and Utah. I'll continue to say having an independent insurance agent on your side like the Burns Insurance Agency is a massive, massive advantage. Whether it's your home insurance, your auto insurance, your commercial, even your life insurance, they can shop for you, and they will every single year for no matter what the policy is. I just saved over $350 on my home insurance this year. And you know what I did to deserve that? Absolutely nothing. They did it for me free of charge because that's what they do for you every single year. They got access to over 20 different insurance companies. So if you want to have somebody take a look at your home, your auto, your commercial, or whatever the insurance type may be, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email him at burns@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk a little bit about these games in the Big Ten in week four. Started off on a Thursday night, and Ryan, I think there's an argument to be made that Illinois might be the second best team sitting right now in the Big Ten West.
I'm going to continue to tell you, I am expecting Illinois to beat Wisconsin and or Iowa. Like, they are playing really well, and Brett Bielema continues to just build programs. I mean, what he wanted to do at Arkansas was do the same thing he wanted to do at Wisconsin. And you see Sam Pittman now at Arkansas doing essentially what Brett Bielema was supposed to do. Well, Brett Bielema comes back to Illinois. I mean, they have one of the best running backs in the country that nobody's talking about in Chase Brown. Isaiah Williams with another 100-yard game and a touchdown. And like the Chattanooga Mocs, they're an FCS team. They're a top 10 rated FCS team, though. They were 3-0 coming into that game. And Illinois absolutely laid the wood to them. And by the middle of the second quarter, I mean, Chattanooga didn't want to be there. Now, I will say again, the most interesting game for next weekend is without question Illinois traveling to Camp Randall. Yes, for the Brett Bielema factor, but Illinois kind of gets a mini bye to prepare for Wisconsin because they get two extra days of preparation after playing on Thursday night. I am very bullish on this Illinois team in terms of, I think their preseason win total was 4.5 or 5.5. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them get 6-7 wins when I look at the rest of the schedule here. This is an Illinois team that I think is going to be very formidable when Minnesota plays them in a couple weeks.
Okay, Wisconsin falls, Derek, to Ohio State 52-21. That was both an over, and Ohio State covered the points. C.J. Stroud on the day, 17 of 27, 281 yards and 5 touchdowns. Yeah, he's pretty good. And to go along that, Travion Henderson, 21 carries and 121 yards. I think it's safe to say that Ohio State's still in their own tier, and Wisconsin off to a sluggish start at 2-2 and 0-1 in the conference.
Yeah, Wisconsin historically does not play well at Ohio State, even in Wisconsin's better years. They just have not had good luck at all at Ohio State. Now, you could say, who does? And that's probably a fair point. But again, even in Wisconsin's very, very good years, they've really struggled at Ohio State. So I had a hunch this one, it was going to end up, you know, being upside down for him. But I think one of the things that stood out to me was Ohio State so far this year, up until the Wisconsin game, has not on offense had their identity of huge passing plays. Excuse me, the game prior against Toledo, I think they did break out. But before that, they had struggled to you know, rack up the chunk passing plays that they're known for. But certainly against Toledo and then against Wisconsin, it's back. Ohio State's down the field, huge passing plays, long touchdowns, things like that. Their identity in that aspect is definitely back. I mean, this was a rout. Wisconsin, in fact, I believe their last touchdown was very late in the game. The game was certainly out of reach. So, you know, question there being Ohio State's offense looked really, really good. Is Wisconsin's defense, you know, which we've kind of asked on this podcast in the previous weeks, is Wisconsin's defense just not quite as elite as it has been? I think they've looked good, but maybe not quite as suffocating as they've been, for example, last year.
Yeah, I think they're missing those playmakers not named Nick Herbig at linebacker. And to your point, I would also add, Luke, that Derek mentioned, I mean, Braylon Allen had a 75-yard touchdown run when it was, I think, 52-14.
14, yeah.
So if you take out the garbage time touchdown run, Wisconsin running backs of Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi ran for 103 yards on 26 carries. That's under 4 yards a carry. So I think Ohio State's defense continues to play better and better, especially compared to what we saw last year. But I also will continue to raise the question mark of what kind of caliber of an offensive line does Wisconsin have right now? And a Graham Mertz on the day, 11 of 20 for 94 yards. I mean, again, playing under the lights in the horseshoe is a tough ask. But I will say again, Graham Mertz versus Ryan Walters this upcoming weekend, I am intrigued to see what Ryan Walters, Illinois' defensive coordinator, is going to have schemed up.
Okay, Michigan knocks off the Terrapins from Maryland, 34-27 in Ann Arbor. You know, I said this could be a sneaky good game, and you know Maryland really was in it. You know they did get the ball run down their throats, but you know on the day you know they do cover the points. Michigan was a 17-point favorite. All in all, I have to say, like I walked away from you know I watched the like condensed version or like the highlights of this game on YouTube TV, and honestly, I was really impressed with what I saw from Maryland, and they're going to be a tough out in the East, Ryan.
Maryland's offensive line was really good in this game. I mean, I can't say enough good things about what they did to protect Taulia. Now, eventually they got to him. But if you take, I mean, to start the game, for those of you who didn't watch, Maryland fumbles the opening kickoff and Michigan scores in the next play. For the final 59 minutes of the game, it's 27-27. Like, I think Maryland, I mean, credit to Mike Locksley, actually had them playing well in a close game. The thing I would note with Michigan, though, is J.J. McCarthy couldn't complete a deep pass to save his life. And it's why it's why Michigan couldn't pull away. On the day, J.J. McCarthy was 1 of 8 on throws of 20-plus yards. He had guys wide open down the field, and he just could not find them. So when I look forward to now that game between the Wolverines traveling into Kinnick Stadium this upcoming weekend, I am going to be very intrigued. But Luke, I think Maryland is a better team than what Minnesota saw the last couple of seasons.
Oh, absolutely. And Blake Corum for Michigan, 30 carries, 243 yards. I am excited to see that matchup between Iowa and Michigan. Very obvious that Michigan wants to run the football. They try to have a little bit of balance, but to your point, J.J. McCarthy, you know, 18 of 26, but, you know, he did struggle a little bit in this game relative to what we'd seen against the kind of those cupcake games that they had. So let's chat a little bit too about this Central Michigan and Penn State game. Penn State 33, Central Michigan 14. Derek, at the end of the day, I have to be honest with you. I walked away last week going like, oh, hey, you know, Penn State found a rushing attack. You know, they were able to get a mass 166 yards, but that was on 32 carries. I expected more out of this rushing attack against the Central Michigan team, Derek, that came in 1-2 and walked away 1-3.
I was right with you last week. We saw not only a good running game against Auburn, but a lot of explosive gains in the running, you know, long plays. So I was right with you in saying I think they found the running game. They look like a really good team. You know, there was more than meets the eye to this game. And the thing that I look at is the thing that I question is Penn State ended up +5 in the take give. Now, so one would, you know, those sometimes are, you know, not a result necessarily of the way that you're playing. Sometimes it's the right bounce or what have you. So the first thing that jumps to mind for me is what's the score like if this is an even in the take give, or even if Central Michigan is +1 or +2 in the take give. So I think this was a sneaky, much closer game than it maybe appeared because of that turnover differential.
Well, even at halftime, it was 21-14. I mean, I don't know that we're going to learn much about Penn State until they play Michigan in like 3 weeks from now. Because you look at their September, they sneak out a win in that first game against Purdue. I don't know that Purdue's a great football team, but I guess we'll find out more this weekend when Minnesota plays them. They kicked the crap out of Ohio. Yeah, they went down into Auburn and won by 30, but I will remind you, Auburn, if they didn't beat that Mizzou team, which I haven't seen a bad beat like that. If you're a Mizzou fan, I would be incredibly frustrated, where I have no idea why that running back is reaching the ball out at the goal line there in that instance, where if Auburn would have lost that game against Missouri this weekend, I believe Bruce Feldman said that they would have fired their coach. Auburn is not a good football team. Central Michigan is not a good football team. Like, how much do we really know about Penn State right now?
I thought they were good after last week, and now I'm back questioning, and I guess that's what makes college football great.
I just think Auburn's a lot worse than what we thought. I don't know that we've learned a ton about them. Now, that's where I'll say, I think Penn State is a good football team. How good? I don't know, but is there enough where Penn State is, I think the number 11 team in the country, and Minnesota should be 23? Well, it's a good thing these teams will play head-to-head in a few weeks, and we can find out, but I am intrigued to see what it looks like for the Nittany Lions on October the 15th when they have to travel to the Big House.
All right. So Cincinnati knocks off Indiana 45-24. This covered the points, and the Bearcats were able to cover as well. All in all, this game came down to the second quarter. Cincinnati won that quarter 28-7. Indiana, not particularly probably a terribly strong team again this year, but you know, the Bearcats obviously are good. Derek, curious to see, like, you know, how they trend. The obvious underdog for Indiana, but I just think this started to show some of the warts that they have.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana, I think this whole year has been a very emotional team. They don't quit. They have a lot of fight, and you know, after that second quarter, you know, I fully expected them. Well, didn't expect them, but we're looking for them to, you know, curl up and want to die and not be there. But they didn't. You know, I think they've taken on the personality of their coach, you know, Tom Allen, who is, you know, high emotion day in and day out. And so, you know, they didn't quit. They stayed in it. But ultimately, I think they've had some you know, things go their way in the first few weeks, you know, notably the Illinois game, which Illinois lost to them. And we talked about it at the time that everything went wrong for Illinois, tons and tons of mistakes. And I'm sorry to take the credit away from Indiana, but Illinois just, they couldn't get out of their own way in that game. So yeah, I think it caught up with them this game. I think Cincinnati's a solid team, and Indiana just wasn't able to keep up ultimately.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Iowa winning 27-10 over Rutgers in Piscataway. This was a game where, again, just a reminder for those of you that didn't listen to the preview, Iowa was favored by 8 with an over-under of 34. Congratulations to the two squads. They were able to cover that in combination. I think there were 2 offensive touchdowns in total in this game. I can't remember. Yeah, but again, 2 defensive touchdowns for Iowa in this game. I don't think, even though they have 27 points on the board, the Iowa faithful, Ryan, are probably feeling a lot better about their offensive output. I don't think that Rutgers is terribly strong, even though they're 3-1 overall. All in all, this was kind of an ugly game, but you know, they got the win, and Iowa found a way.
Like, you thought it was going to be closer, especially after, you know, Rutgers gets a field goal on their opening possession. You see Spencer Petras have to punt immediately. Rutgers gets the ball back. You're thinking to yourself, boy, if they can get some more points here. Yep. And then Cooper DeJean gets another interception for a touchdown. I think we're going to have to be talking more about him. I mean, on a defense that's got stars like Riley Moss and Jack Campbell, I think Cooper DeJean has been really, really good. It was one of the best returns you'll see on a 45-yard interception return. But I'm just so – it's another game where Iowa's defense and special teams outscore their offense. And I just feel like I'm screaming into the ether as I continue to, and I continue to be looked – just I just look silly. It can't be sustainable. All you have to do to beat the Iowa Hawkeyes is not beat yourself. And Bill Parker, Iowa's defensive coordinator, looks me in the eyes and laughs at me down into my soul when I say that. But this is just such a sad offense. Spencer Petras, to me, didn't look any better. I continue to have big question marks about Iowa's offensive line. But as the story is probably told in many games of football, Luke, If you have two defensive touchdowns, my guess is the stats would say you're going to win a lot of football games.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. If you're Phil Parker, you just have to be asking yourself, we're going to waste this defense that I have, Derek. Like, this is an incredible defense that Iowa has, and they're just wasting it with no offense.
Well, I think there's kind of two ways to look at this game. One is, as we pointed out, here we go again. Iowa's going to continue to not only win the take give, but just have their defense scoring multiple touchdowns every game. The other side of it, which nobody in listening to this podcast is going to want to hear, but I thought the Iowa offense did start to show a pulse. Now, did they look good? No. Did they look better than previous weeks? Yes, I thought they did. Sam Laporta is maybe reaching into that reliable target area. I don't think Spencer Petras looked much better. I agree with Ryan in that regard. But they did run the ball a little bit at times. Again, I'm reaching here a little bit, but what I can't seem to get out of my mind is thinking about Iowa somehow figuring this out. And again, do I think that they're, you know, by the time November comes around, they're going to be humming on offense? No, I don't. But again, with that really, really good defense and one of the best punters in the entire country, if they can find a pulse on offense and have some semblance of offense, they're going to be right there in November. The other thing is, despite the fact that they're continuing to play so upside down, they're winning games. You know, it looks ugly. They're not figuring things out fast on offense, but they're continuing to win games. So it'll be really, really interesting to see if history repeats itself and see that they've somewhat turned this around or figured things out by November.
We're going to find out in the next three games specifically. They faced Michigan at home at 11 a.m. this weekend. Then they have to travel to Champaign, and then they get a bye week before Ohio State. So you're facing two top five rated teams in Illinois on the road. I could see them being 0-3. I could see them being 2-1. I don't. I mean, if they're 0-3 after that three game stretch, I would start to feel pretty dang good about Minnesota's chances in the West.
Yeah.
If they're 2-1, it may definitely come down to senior day for Minnesota against Iowa here in Minneapolis.
Do we think those? So I suppose the Ohio State game. But what's the biggest spread going to be in those three games? Either way,
I think they'll be. I think they'll be a 17 plus point dog against Ohio State.
They for sure
will be. And I would say the spread right now for this weekend's game with Michigan traveling to Kinnick Stadium, Michigan is 11 point favorites as we currently stand.
Really?
I would have thought it.
I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised.
Can JJ McCarthy, the freshman quarterback or second year quarterback, call him whatever you want, if he doesn't turn over the ball, Michigan wins this game. If Iowa is plus +3 in the take give in Kinnick Stadium, I think we all know what's going to happen there.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit about Northwestern, Miami of Ohio. We've already talked a little bit about Fitzy, so let's keep this one short. They lose 14-17. A loss to Miami of Ohio now puts you back-to-back losses against teams you paid to come in. You're 1-3. You're 0-3 at home. Your only win is against Nebraska. I saw a tweet somewhere that if once you beat Nebraska, there's a curse following you this year. Like, everybody that's beat them has gone on a kind of a losing streak. But all that said, this is a tough game. They're able to get up early in the first quarter, end up tied in the first half, and then lose in the fourth quarter, fellas. Just a tough pill to swallow. Ryan Helinski, 24 of 42 for 232 yards. Evan Hall, again, factors in largely. He's a big focal point of that offense. But, man, this is a team, and you said it, Ryan, you know, losing their defensive coordinator obviously is not boding well for them.
And they're 1-3 right now, but listen to their next five games before they play Minnesota here at Huntington Bank Stadium. You ready? They travel to Penn State this weekend, then they host Wisconsin, and then they get a bye week to prepare for Maryland, who I think is clearly a much better team. Then they have to travel to Kinnick Stadium, and then the week before they play Minnesota, they host Ohio State at Ryan Field. Like, if you're 1-3 right now, they aren't going to be favored in my eyes in any of the next five games before Minnesota. I certainly can't see a way they're favored against Minnesota. I mean, Northwestern is probably going to be 1-8 coming into that game. And then I will say again, why are we not talking about Pat Fitzgerald being on the hot seat? 2019, he's 3-9. 2020, in the weird COVID year, he finds a way to go 6-2 in conference, and they go to the Citrus Bowl. All right, last year.
Yeah.
3-9. And if he's one win coming into that Minnesota game, that's three of the last 4 years where Northwestern has been horrible. Like, I understand, like, he has done a lot for that institution, and I get it. And maybe Northwestern Athletics doesn't have high aspirations for anything better than Pat Fitzgerald. But in a world of what have you done for me lately, in three of the last four seasons, this would be a dreadful Northwestern team.
All right, Purdue 28-26 over the Florida Atlantic Owls. Purdue moves to 2-2 on the year. They do this without Aiden O'Connell, who is arguably – no, he's not arguably. He is the best quarterback in the Big Ten West. This is the thing – this is the stat that jumps out to me, fellas. Purdue, 188 rushing yards on 36 attempts. And they only have 22 pass attempts on 188 rushing yards to 166 rushing yards. Who would have thought they saw that coming, Derek?
Yeah, the team was definitely different without Aiden O'Connell. I mean, it was they looked clunky. I mean, there are times with that Purdue offense that they look almost unstoppable, the way that they're clicking on some of their gadget plays and getting the ball downfield and mixing in a run just to keep things balanced, but it just didn't look, it looked clunky all night. And, you know, the thing that haunts them is because they're a pass first team, they just cannot seem to sustain leads and they just can't hang on to games. And it was another case on Saturday where, you know, it was back and forth and back and forth because they can get a lead and they can score on almost anybody, but they just can't hold it because of that offense. I think they did have some success running the ball, but it's still just, it looked disjointed without O'Connell.
I am really not taking anything from this game. Peace and love.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Florida Atlantic's offense is nothing like Minnesota's. They got an incredibly mobile quarterback. I guess somebody go tell Jacoby Windman that they got a mobile quarterback for Florida Atlantic. But it's a very different offense. Purdue also had their backup quarterback playing, who would definitely like to use his legs a lot more than Aiden O'Connell did. I mean, you even look at Charlie Jones's day. Yeah, he had 2 touchdowns and 9 receptions, just 59 receiving yards. They had no downfield passing to save their life with. And that's where I will say again, I am expecting Aiden O'Connell to play this weekend. I think the spread would indicate that. But I think Minnesota is a 10-ish point favorite. I think without Aiden O'Connell, that spread jumps by another 4 or 5 points. But what Charlie Jones has done in 4 games is absurd. 41 receptions for 533 yards and 7 scores. He has been, he has been the alpha. I had the questions coming into the season, who's Purdue's alpha receiver without David Bell? Charlie Jones has answered that. The question is, who is throwing him the ball? Now, if it's going to be this backup quarterback in Austin Burton, then yeah, we can take something from this game. But if it's not, I don't see Purdue being able to rush the ball on Minnesota. Again, something called Dylan Downing ran for 113 yards because it looks like King Doru is out. If it's Austin Burton and there's no King Doru back there, especially their main running back, I feel pretty good about Minnesota's chances against a backup quarterback. Because, Luke, while I wouldn't disagree with you that Aiden O'Connell is probably the best quarterback in the Big Ten West, I think if you look at just through 4 games here, I think Tanner Morgan has at least an argument to be in that same tier.
Okay, we want to thank everybody for listening. If this is your first venture with Gopher Gridiron Radio, we aren't usually this long-winded, but occasionally we do have some long episodes. I hope you're able to get some yard work done or get your lawn mowed. We want to thank all of our sponsors. We want to thank the Goal Line Club. We want to thank Legacy Life and Law. We want to thank the Burns Insurance Agency and Caps Custom. Thank you for listening, and go Gophers.